a no conflict of interest provision as president. It was many, many years old. This is for presidents because they don't want presidents getting, I understand, they don't want presidents getting tangled up in minutiae. They want a president to run the country. So I could actually run my business. I could actually run my business and run government at the same time. I don't like the way that looks, but I would be able to do that if I wanted to. I'd be the only one that would be able to do that. You can't do that in any other capacity. But as a president, I could run the Trump Organization, great, great company, and I could run the company, the country. I'd do a very good job, but I don't want to do that.
So there we have it, folks. There's a lot going on. And so we have the juxtaposition of President Barack Obama's farewell address to Mr. Trump's first press conference as president-elect. We are seeing the battle back and forth around the nomination of Jeff Sessions and others, Tillerson, for their positions that will be taking place all this week and kind of a really push through, many people think, in terms of how it's been done, kind of unprecedented in many ways. So what does all that mean about where our body politic is now? We want to know what you think at 410-319-8888. You can also email us, talk@steinershow.org. Tweet us over here at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages, which I'll be checking out, at 410-319-8888. In studio is Dr. Malaya Cromer, who is director of the Sarah T. Hughes Field Politics Center and associate professor in the Department of Political Science and International Relations at Goucher College. Good to have you in the studio again, Malaya.
Thanks for having me.
And our friend Linda McAllister joins us, Republican strategist, former congressional candidate, host of Night Talk, Get to the Point on Pittsburgh Cable News Channel, and Get Right with Linda McAllister on News Radio 1020 KDKA in Pittsburgh. And friend Lenny, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Welcome. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, man. Happy New Year to you. So let's begin. Let me start. Lenny, we hadn't talked in a while, so let me let you jump in here. You heard my intro. You heard a bit of where we're going. How do you place this for us in your political perspective?
In regards to the Trump conference, or what exactly you want to start with?
Wait, start with the Trump press conference? I was thinking about, in my head, listening to the Trump press conference, and then juxtaposition of that with Obama's farewell address. Not an easy thing to do. I mean, I'm just, to me, there's such a glaring difference between the former administration and the new one coming in.
It is, and it's very much a glaring difference between how things are going to get done. And it's very, honestly, since November 8th, there's been a lot of reflection that I've done personally, and I think that the country's been doing a lot of reflection as well. Because if you look at just the styles of what we've seen. You know, there was a big style contrast between the choppy speaking style of George W. Bush and the eloquence of Barack Obama, and that was a big contrast. That looks like shades of gray compared to what we're getting now. And the problem with that is it goes even deeper than differences in political philosophy. You know, with President Obama, you know, as a Republican, there's a lot of things I differ with him on, but I think that when it comes to trying to be a statesman, I think that he, when he chooses to do that, does that extremely well. Donald Trump can care less about being a statesman. The people around Donald Trump can care less about being statesmen or stateswomen. And where we are globally, we need people to be more statesmen, and particularly when it comes to domestic issues, we need people to unify. And so this week we saw the juxtaposition of someone that had the innate ability to be a statesman when they chose to, versus somebody that, I don't even know if President-elect Trump has the capability of being a statesman. And then, of course, there's the intent do I want to be a statesman? And it just is in vogue right now. So when you start looking at where we are when it comes to American politics, at a time where we need clarity and unification and a sense of true magnanimous gravitas, we have Donald Trump yelling at Jim Acosta from CNN, calling CNN fake news. We have these confirmation hearings going on with some very interesting dynamics transpiring. And you continue to see people say that they're fearful of what's going to happen over the course of the next 4 years, starting 8 days from now. And it's a very unique place to be in American politics and American history. I mean, I told people for the last year we're encountering the 1960s all over again, and I think we're here. I genuinely think we're here. Does that make Donald Trump Richard Nixon? I don't know. But I think we're back in the 60s, and I think that's not a good thing for America.
That's let's probe that a bit more, but Malaya.
So I don't. I agree with much that the previous commenter just said. I do want to talk a little bit about the style contrast, because I think this is the central point. I think people need to keep in mind that Donald Trump is a celebrity at the end of the day. And I think when you're a celebrity and your relationship with the press is fundamentally different than being a public servant and your relationship with the press. So for the better part of his adult life, Donald Trump's relationship with the press was the press asking him to please give a comment. Like getting an interview with Donald Trump was a score for somebody. And now he will have to, I think, adjust to a reality where now he's a public servant. He's beholden to us as the populace, and that part of that public service is speaking to the press and being transparent. Whether he'll adjust to those norms but not rules of behavior is really anybody's guess. And I think the larger part of the news cycle that really stuck out to me, or at least the whole with Trump's presser, and Hugh Hewitt on MSNBC, he's a conservative pundit, mentioned this, and I thought this was so interesting, that really the BuzzFeed essentially ruined the central part of that press conference, where we should have been focusing on his disentanglement of his business. But instead, we were focusing on this larger kind of fake news, BuzzFeed dossier kind of narrative. And that was really, I think, the worst part of that entire press conference.
So let's talk about what this potential conflict means. I mean, you had here in the Senate, one of the senators, one of them being from Maryland, Senator Ben Carson, introducing a bill to annulment, mm-hmm. part of the Constitution, saying that he would introduce legislation to block the presidency of Donald Trump if he does not divest himself of his business holdings. This was part of the press conference, and clearly he's not. I mean, he's giving it over to his sons, but there's all kinds of writing and people analyzing, saying the potentially huge conflicts of interest that this shows. I mean, what about this? Is not a minor detail, it seems to me, that's only grown in importance since the Constitution was written.
No, but I feel like it became a minor part of the larger narrative from yesterday. Uh-huh. And so I think that is really, really problematic.
Because of the BuzzFeed?
Because of the BuzzFeed stuff and the salacious things that were obviously attached to it. And that to me is a really big problem. So we allowed a situation where President-elect Trump was able to stand on a stage and point to a bunch of folders as if this was have a lawyer come up as if this was enough. But no, I mean, there certainly needs to be more serious conversations and considerations. I don't think it will be enough for the American populace. That being said, maybe it will be. He also brought up a point during his press conference that nobody else besides reporters care anymore about his tax returns.
Right.
So we have to ask ourselves, how much does the public care? And this is as a pollster, this is the question I always ask myself. How much does the public care? Is it enough for the public, his just turning over his business over to his sons? And how much does that matter?
Depending on which public we're asking. So, I mean, Lenny?
I think that the public is fatigued. I think that they're sick of politics. You know, I just ran in 2016, and people complained about the person I ran against, complained about politics as normal, but as we well know, Congress, through gerrymandered district, has an incumbency rate of over 90%. The House didn't flip. You know, there was corruption in the Democratic side of things when it came to their primary process, and then they saw what happened on the Republican side of things. They saw the media give Donald Trump 5 to 7 morning interviews on morning shows every single day, all the way up to when he won the nomination, and then watch them complain about why in the world is this guy the nominee. So people are fatigued with politics, but with that said, it starts allowing people to get away with glossing over details, not sticking to what's important. Now, you know, if you have to choose between what's worse, is the BuzzFeed report, what they release in the reports, is any of it true versus, you know, he hasn't divested himself of his businesses? They're both important, because if your president can be compromised that easily, that's problematic. If you go back to the 50s and 60s, that's one of the things that Nixon brought up against Kennedy, was the fact that there was evidence that at the time Senator Kennedy was having a liaison with an East German spy. that was a big deal. And that was in, what, 60 years ago, 50, 60 years ago.
Right, right.
Can you imagine if any of what was published at BuzzFeed is true, what that means in a world that shrunk through technology, where information can be disseminated to the everyday American in middle America within a matter of minutes. Couple that with the fact that we still, in many instances, don't know where the president-elect's financial interests lie and how that will impact a State Department and several policies, both economic and foreign relations policies, where you have a former head of a global organization that's looking to be Secretary of State, and a guy that is the first multi-billionaire to ever ascend to the presidency. These are things that, again, when you have a fatigued America that doesn't want to engage politics and they're kind of sick of it all, they're pushing it away from themselves and they're looking at it more as entertainment or, you know, a disgusting aspect of their everyday lives versus saying, you know, I'm part of this, I can change this, I'm empowered to change this, even though I'm not happy about what transpired on November 8th. You know, it's not that long ago that a group of people made what seemingly was impossible, electing an African-American to the presidency, possible. And with the short attention span that most Americans have, particularly when it comes to politics and news, this can be a huge detriment to the American people over the course of the next 24 months.
And I want to – so I think fatigue is a really central point that Lenny has hit on. I also think direct impact is a really important point. So it's not just a fatigue of the American populace dealing with political scandal, a fatigue with dealing with government, but it's also how much does these individual things directly impact me. And I would argue for a lot of people, they look at the tax returns and they might even look at the failure to divest as something that does not directly impact their livelihoods or their everyday lives. And so it is really difficult. So when you have a bunch of things swirling around, which is really unprecedented for any incoming president, yep. Which is, again, the larger kind of the big picture approach, that when these individual items do not directly, people do not feel as if they directly impact them, I have to wonder how much truth there is to the idea that nobody really cares about my tax returns anymore because I won. If people have already moved on and they're looking towards any sort of policy initiatives, if they're focusing more on when Trump is on the stage talking about look at Ford, look at General Motors, look at all the business I'm trying to bring back to the United States. If that's the message that people walk away from, and I think we need to think about that, particularly given the outcome of the election cycle, right, that everybody thought that middle America would have been, or subsections of the population would have been as offended by Trump's comments, and it turns out they weren't. They weren't focusing on that. They were focusing on the economic message, and I'm wondering if we're doing the same thing again with our analysis of the press conference.
Well, we keep saying the Europe poster. I mean, we keep saying mm-hmm. the people. I mean, but I mean, it's more complex than that. I mean, the people who voted for Donald Trump
mm-hmm.
are not as worried about all the things that we're talking about. But the people who did not vote for Donald Trump are worried about the things that we're talking about. And so, I mean, this is that divide I think Lenny was talking, that mm-hmm. you were referring to, Lenny, that what we're seeing is a widening of the gap in America between people and constituencies, not lessening it. And I think there's reasons for that we can get into if we have time today. If not, we'll do it, though. I think that's the issue here. It's not the people. It's people who voted.
I think it's worse, Mark. What it is some of these same issues, maybe not the same exact details, but same ethical issues existed with Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. But Democrats were willing to overlook that because there's no possible way you can vote Donald Trump into the presidency. Just as people that voted for Trump look at Hillary Clinton and say, you know, I know that Donald Trump has these issues, but there's no possible way that you can vote Hillary Clinton into the presidency. Where we are, and this is what's truly problematic from a nonpartisan perspective, is that now we have large segments of Americans that are willing to overlook what used to be fatal flaws about politicians in leadership positions. I won't call them leaders. I'll call them politicians in leadership positions, willing to overlook those huge flaws because they hate the other side that much. And when you're willing to sell out your ethics and your moral fabric just because of hate of the other side or demonization of the other side, of people that are your countrymen, you start not having a cohesive country. And if you look at what's going on with our domestic policy, the protests in the streets, the breakdown of education, the segmentation economically of America, you see the proof in that pudding. That is probably most problematic. We need to get back to a right is a right. And if you're a Democrat and you're right, concede the point. Partner if you can and move forward from there versus saying, well, that's not, my guy's not as bad as your guy. And so, therefore, my guy might be corrupt, but mine's is a misdemeanor. You committed a felony, or mine might have been a first, second degree felony, but yours was a first. So you're worse, and therefore we have to dump on you. That is where we are from a political and civic standpoint. And you can't move forward with God or with justice if that is the basis that you're moving forward with.
So it's interesting. As you were both speaking, one of the things that struck me is that here I'm speaking with two people who I respect a great deal. I mean, you are, Malaya, a kind of a moderate Democrat in some senses, or a thinker in your political world. And Lenny, you're a moderate Republican in your world. A moderate political thinker, unlike in the broad spectrum of America. But I sense from both of you a what you described earlier, Lenny, as a sense of fatigue yourselves, even though you both love politics, you're in the middle of it. And a real concern about where we are going. I didn't mean to label you as one part or another. You're a pollster, and that's your job. I apologize, Malaya, but I do sense that.
Well, I mean, for me, I consider myself a moderate independent, but right. my issue here with this the larger picture here is I do see a lot of conflicts of interest here. And I think that ethics is really central to our governance. And I think transparency is really central to our governance. But I do respect the fact that at the individual level, people are concerned with their daily lives. And I think there's only so much attention you can pay to the, if unless you're somebody who lives and breathes this stuff, who can pay to an everyday news cycle. You're more interested in putting food on the table, going to work, spending time with your family. And so I think my criticism of the BuzzFeed release and my criticism of that is that it didn't allow the news cycle to fully explore, I think, something which was important, which I think I wish people cared a lot more about, was Trump's business entanglings. I would like to see him fully divest. I would like to see him take a step away from it. I accept the outcome of the election, and as an American, I do want to see things move forward. I actually would like to see the promise of more manufacturing jobs move back to America. I would like to see some of the high-minded rhetoric of the Trump administration actually be put into play.
Lenny?
Well, and here's the rub. When you live in the 24/7 news cycle, people are willing to do what it takes to jump to the front of the line, whether or not what they're saying is 100% true or substantiated or anything else along those lines. And I would be more inclined to risk that if we had an electorate that was more inclined to hold the body politic accountable. Again, if you look at everything from how we gerrymander to how we allow people to slide past issues to how we don't fixate on the significance of things. What's the significance of somebody having deep ties in other foreign lands? What's the significance, whether it's the Trump Foundation and the Trump Organization or the Clinton Foundation, having these ties with foreign governments? If you're more inclined to say, see, gotcha, demonize and move on versus really analyzing what it means. And this goes back to critical thinking in American politics and American, just society overall. If you're unwilling to engage in that, just at a very cursory level, you no longer own your politics. You are basically, in essence, outsourcing it. And as much as it's funny, because whether it's Trump supporters or people that are Democrats in the Rust Belt like we are here in Pittsburgh, people don't like outsourcing when it comes to jobs, but they've been outsourcing their politics for decades now. They've been basically mailing it into the brand, whether it's Democrat or Republican. Here in Pennsylvania, you can hit one button and walk out, vote for a whole political party and not know who the heck they are. Mm-hmm. I'm going to outsource what is the most important thing to me as a citizen, which is the people that create every single law that I have to abide by, from how my house looks to what where my traffic lights are to what are the federal laws of the land. And we're at a point of time where people are engaging the wrong things. They're engaging the disagreements, not the actual essence of the law.
So, folks, do join us here, 410-319-8888. We want to hear what you think about all this, especially given the vociferous way that some of you have called in about where we're going. I'd like to hear your thoughts on the time we have left in the segment of 410-319-8888. Malia, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, no. I think my biggest frustration with this is that we even have to have these conversations. And I think this really does go back to the larger kind of point of being a statesman and the larger point of who's qualified to run and win political office. It seems a shame right now that during this transition period that we're bogged down with talking about the conflicts of interest with your business or this stuff with BuzzFeed or these potential ties to Russia. In a lot of ways, like, imagine if it was somebody else, if it was a different Republican who had won, we would be talking about a different vision, perhaps, for America. Maybe changing some of the, maybe some adjustment, maybe different policy initiatives, maybe a different direction for the country. But instead, I feel like we're so bogged down with a Trump-centered media, Trump-centered approach. Everything is about him as an individual and not us as a country. And I think that is probably my biggest frustration.
I mean, I think that part of that is because there are so many people in America who think that Donald Trump is a loose cannon,
mm-hmm,
at best, unstable at worst, that they're worried about the people he's put in place, whether it's Tillerson as a businessman at the head of the Secretary of State, who knows very little about diplomacy, or Jeff Sessions, who is very clear about his feelings about voting rights and more, and as the Attorney General. And Ben Carson is now in the middle of his hearings, who knows nothing about housing. So people are concerned about where, and his children in the White House, yet he's going to divest himself from his business, but his son-in-law is going to sit in the White House advising him. I mean, these are very, people are really worried about, and his answers to many of the questions that he's asked make no sense.
No, and I let this Millie clarify. I think people should be concerned. I think people should push back, and this should be important. I just wish that it wasn't. I wish that we were in a situation where a lot of these ethical issues weren't a problem, that we were actually talking about in this transition of power. We're actually talking about policy, a change in policy perspective, a change in policy goals. That's what I wish this transition period was about, rather than all the other noise. But this is not the card that we were dealt. This is wishful thinking.
Well, that's true, but we have to remember, again, where we are as a country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a year ago at this time, many Democrats voted in the Republican primary and voted for Donald Trump because they were rooting for Trump to win the nomination, thinking that that would ensure that Hillary Clinton would win. This was going on at the same time that the DNC was sabotaging Bernie Sanders. So the same people that are now terrified of Donald Trump because he actually won the election were out there voting for Donald Trump in areas where they could vote in the Republican primary in order to sabotage that process as well. This is what I'm talking about in regards to ethics and morals. If you disagreed with Donald Trump in 2015, you should not have gone to a ballot box in an open primary and voted for Donald Trump to sabotage the Republicans, because you ran the risk of this happening. Yet there were millions, and we can look at the numbers.
Billions?
There's plenty of Democrats that did that. Plenty of independents that did that because they said, well, I want Hillary Clinton to win. Therefore, although I completely disagree with this guy, I'm going to basically defraud my own vote by doing this to try to manipulate an outcome in November, and it backfired. And this is the risk that people run when you're not ethically sound on a regular basis.
Before we run out of time here, I do want to try to get a call before we have to take our break. Do you want to respond to that at all, Malia?
I would like to see the numbers on that. So I think that is, I've heard that narrative before, this idea of that you're strategically voting for one candidate to get it, especially during the primaries, to get another. I don't know how much of a difference that as a real number difference that made in an election, but the sentiment was there. And I do respect that that you had a lot of people, I think, that were Democrats were kind of cheering in the background that perhaps that Hillary Clinton could certainly beat Donald Trump, and somebody like a Kasich would have been a very kind of different electoral story. So I agree with the sentiment. I don't know if the strategic voting was going on in that way.
So let me get a couple of quick calls in here from our listeners, and before we have to take a break here and go to our next segment. John, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, John. You're on the air.
Yes. I just want to mention that when the beginning of the Obama administration, Obama declared that Fox News was not a legitimate news organization, wouldn't have him at press conferences, wouldn't answer questions. It was years before he was interviewed by Chris Wallace. Also, the whole point with the press, I've heard many press people say that in the Obama administration, when you went to interview sources, there was always a handler or a lawyer. It was like North Korea.
North Korea.
And the whole thing about executive
orders,
where people were sloughing off at the time, but other people were worried because they said it set a precedent. And now all of a sudden we've got Trump, and here we go. The chickens have come home to roost, in a sense.
Well, I mean, first let me say that historically that Obama was not at the top of the pack with executive actions in this country, far from it. That Ronald Reagan and Bush, he paled in comparison to their executive orders. I mean, that's a reality as well. I'm not here to defend Obama with that. I'm just saying that's just politically wrong. And I don't think Obama banned Fox. He wouldn't be interviewed by them. He didn't stop them from coming to the White House or lambast him and saying, you're fake news, you're horrible people, and I'm not going to answer your questions. He did not let them interview him. That's true. I mean, I think, yeah, that's and let's get one more call in here before we take a break. Malik, you're on the air.
On.
Malik, good morning.
Yeah, do you hear me?
Yes, we got you. You're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, well, honestly, me being independent for a while, I mean, naturally, you know, a lot of my candidates don't have a chance of winning, but I think that it's a two-party system. I mean, you can't blame, I live in Baltimore, and you really can't blame the Republican Party for any of the issues in Baltimore. From a local standpoint, and I just think that people, like a lot of what the two commentators are saying, that people aren't voting for the right candidate. They're voting because they hate the other person, and they're really not informed enough. And the whole thing of outsourcing votes—that's true. Being an independent, I have to study the candidates, look at them what they did 20, 30 years ago to really make a decision. And I think that oftentimes people that just vote their party line—they're really not that informed.
Malik, I appreciate your call. We do have to take a break here, so let me give both of our guests like 30 seconds to close this out before we have to move to our next segment, starting with you, Lenny, and to Malaya.
I think that it's just very important for us to stay engaged, stay informed, do not outsource your votes, and understand that we have been through worse times as a country, and we can turn this around as well.
So I'm in my heart, I'm an institutionalist. So I agree with a lot of what Lenny said about. So I think that our bureaucratic institutions, at least in the State Department, in the Attorney General's office, and certainly with the CIA and the FBI, as well as our Democratic and Republican members of the House and Senate, I think that we have institutional structures that will help guide any president-elect. And any president. So I think I'm always hesitant with the doomsday analysis.
And from the one person who has a little bit of doomsday, I want to thank both of my guests here. Lenny McAllister, it's always great to have you on, brother. Great to have your voice here with us.
Thank
and
you.
Your thoughts and
thank
ideas.
Thank you.
Malaya Croman, Dr.
God bless
Malaya
you
Croman.
All.
You too, Malaya Croman. Same with you. It's always good to have you in the studio.
Thanks
we'll
for
have
having
you both
me.
Back very soon for a much longer segment. We have lots to talk about in the coming months. Stay with us. We're going to take a break and actually get away from politics for a minute. And the folks joining us are from Tuva. A little throat singing and music coming up. Stay with us.